Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 381st episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Working with Lemons and Jerry Windley Doust, two patrons that have been with us for a long time. Thank you so much. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Unlow. Today we've got Kestrin Pantera back on the show. She's got a new film debuting on Hulu. It'll be out by the time this episode drops, called Pretty Problems. And she was on the show back in the day, episode 216, when we were just at the dawn of a pretty gnarly pandemic. So it's great to catch up with her. Both of her films were South by Southwest darlings. She's got a really interesting comparison of experiences between the first film and the second film and how it's an incremental progress that we're all making. And she continues to level up. She's really fun. Feels like you're just chatting with an old friend. This was a great one.
Yeah. She told us the story about her band that she's in. And had you heard that story before? Pretty crazy story.
I have not. I knew that she was in that band because
some kind of famous people.
Some famous people, because the famous people had come up in my feed. And then I was like, wait, is that Kestrin? You know, it's a great conversation. She also is just an extrovert. She's a people person. And I'm always interested to talk to those people because I have a hard time understanding how their brain works. And she lets us inside and just kind of cracks open her take on how to be a person around famous people in Los Angeles.
She's also like really a great example of someone who is on this journey for the long haul, you know. It's not like she started making films a year ago. She's been acting and performing and doing music and hosting various things and writing and directing for a long time, and just fun to see her career kind of exploding right now. We hope you enjoy it. Before we talk to her, though, I want to remind everyone we have a Patreon page, patreon.com/justshootitpod. We've been getting a lot of emails and messages and Instagram DMs about people enjoying, you know, our episodes about burning out or some of our deeper talks about the existential state of being a filmmaker nowadays, and also just enjoying, you know, the episodes that I'm not featured on as prominently. So, you know, if you feel like you're getting anything out of this and you want to give us $1 a month just to help us pay for some editing, you know, we've kind of made a little bit of an effort to have a few sponsor-free months just to give people a little bit of a break. So I guess we probably do still have a couple sponsors popped in here and there. You know, anything you can do is really helpful. And at the very least, it motivates us to keep going. Keep making this podcast. 381 weeks. We have not stopped yet. Okay, well, check it out. Patreon.com/justshootitpod. We appreciate anything you can do there. Even if it's just for a month, you know, it'll make us smile. We'll mention your name. Okay, we've talked enough. Let's talk to Kestrin Pantera.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, Kestrin Pantera, back on the podcast. Thanks for coming back.
Back on the podcast.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Basically, this podcast has just turned into we talk about people's movies for like 5 minutes, and then we talk to them about whether you can make a living doing this career or not. So I'm always curious because we have these people that have these super successful films that win festivals and premiere on Hulu. Like yours is coming out on Hulu tonight at midnight. Congrats. And this is your second film at South By. But then you realize everyone is so jealous of people like you. But then I'm guessing you probably that your bulk of your income does not come from these South By movies, but like all the other things that you have in your life. And I know, you know, all these unions are striking right now because there's this issue in Hollywood that none of us can really make a consistent living doing the thing that we do. And that's like the thing that has just really been on my mind. I mean, on everyone's mind, but it's like, I don't know why it took me like 8 years to realize that all these people I'm jealous of for having these like awesome movies at awesome festivals are struggling just like everybody else.
And they're just jealous of you directing commercials and are like, God, if only I could shoot X amount of commercials a year to balance out with my award-winning indie film career, then. But then when I talk to my commercial director friends, they're like, no, if you lose focus on commercial directing, then you fuck it up and you don't get the calls.
Yeah.
How do you balance that? I mean,
it's a good question to ask us because Matt has kind of been, he's showrunning a show right now full time that's kind of outside of the commercial world. And I think he's been talking about that.
I haven't talked to the production companies for like three months.
Like, who's going to remember me?
Yeah.
And I'm like on the other end of the spectrum where I'm like, all I do all day and all night is write treatments. I just went on this like 2.5 week vacation to Israel, and I spent like half the time on Zoom calls pitching on jobs that I might not even get, and like just not even being with my family on vacation, you know, and not getting paid for it either.
So 381 episodes deep, we still don't know the answer, Kestrin. Like it's hard. Like, I don't know. I think maybe honestly the answer is become a name brand director where you can do commercial work in between projects, but it's because they want you, not because they want your pitch. But like, that's not a sustainable plan.
Right.
Do you know like what I mean? That's like saying be Taika Waititi, be Lance Accord, you know, be Greta Gerwig. But like, I don't know. Yeah. And short of that, it's pretty tricky for sure.
The last commercial I directed happened after we had won a bunch of awards and had a bunch of press. And mm-hmm. It just happened to be that a colleague, an old friend of mine, happened to be an agency producer and basically called me up and invited me to pitch and was like, go find a commercial production company right now. And Monday is the creative brief day.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And other people were bidding on the job. Unfortunately, I won it, but it was definitely like a plate spinning whirlwind. And I wasn't even home, right? I was like at a festival in a hotel room being like, ah,
This and I was great. About to say, right, like I would wager that you were posting on Instagram, right, and living an incredible life. And then that agency producer was like, oh, Kestrin, look at her being successful and awesome. She would be perfect for this spot. And then invited you to pitch. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's mm-hmm. almost, the problem is that indie films are the commercial for, or the marketing material for our other lucrative opportunities. But it takes so much energy to make indie films that sometimes you don't have enough gas in the tank to be pitching regularly on the more lucrative stuff.
So, I think that there is a window in there that can harmonize.
I even agreed 100%.
Hearing you say it back to me actually reminds me of how much time you spend not posting when you're shooting and editing. And then once it gets in and waiting for a festival, then once you're in a festival, you're just kind of dipping between festivals and blasting people with like pictures of you, like narcissism, mm-hmm. essentially, right? Narcissism and laurels. And it's your payoff for the pain mm-hmm. of making something with a budget that wouldn't be as big as you would normally like. So I think that there is a sweet spot in that for slipping in a treatment here and there.
100%. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And I think, you know, the balance is just in, you know, keeping that equilibrium like you were talking about before, like keeping your eye on both prizes, one eye open on each avenue, basically.
But also the commercial world, like unless you keep going and hustling every single week, it like dries up too. It, you know, like you could, I remember the first time I signed onto a roster of this company that had like these really cool directors, and I would look at their work and they have these like Volkswagen commercials that were multi-million dollar, like beautiful commercials. And I'd be like, oh my goodness, that this director must work all the time. And they're like, yeah, we can't get him a job. I haven't gotten him a job in 2 years. This stuff is just too old. I'm like, what? This is like, these are commercials I grew up on, you know?
That so was shot just, on film and still look good, you know, like still look awesome.
So it's like, I guess to me, the difference between like the 8 years we've been doing this podcast is that we're just older. You know, when we started, we didn't have any kids. We like weren't worried about like the mortgage or the car payments or all the other things. And we were like so excited to be in the mix, to be get these opportunities to pitch and do this and to go shoot test videos and to go travel for a couple months and make a movie and do this and do that. But then, you know, I think after like 8 years, you're just kind of like tired of doing that and realize you're responsible for all these other things.
Yeah, I would even argue not even tired of doing that, just responsible for other stuff. Like if I didn't sleep, I would, you know, write a treatment and a new screenplay every 6 months or whatever. But like if you have to choose between like kicking the ball around in the backyard with your kid or, you know, busting your ass on a treatment, life is short. You know, you want to just like enjoy the time while you got it, you know?
Yeah, that's why you just got to get a robot that kicks balls.
Talk about a tangent. Kestrin.
Well, no, but Kestrin, what's like,
it so you does said tie in school hours. That's why school's great, right? You have a hard deadline.
My daughter starts
to deliver Monday. By
Monday she starts school.
My goodness.
Preschool. I cannot.
Oh,
wait.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
It also is hard.
I know. Yeah.
Someone, your kids, how old's your youngest, Kestrin?
7.
Yeah, gotcha. See, so you're in it.
Yeah, you're in a different
place.
Deal. Yeah.
Someone just, like this EP I'm working with just texted me today. You know, we're talking about directors and companies and things. And he's like, when are you making a movie? And I was like, well, I made a couple movies back in the day. And he's like, you got anything lined up? I'm like, not until my youngest is like at least 5 years old. Like, he's 2 right now. And like, there's no way I could leave my wife for like 2 months to make a movie and leave her alone with him. She would explode. So I do think maybe Matt and I are in the thick of it in terms of like just like brain space to be creative and make a living and, you know, be part of the family.
Well, hold on. So you said your youngest is 7, but your previous film that we talked to you about, when did you shoot Mother's Little Helpers?
So I shot Mother's Little Helpers in 2018. because I was going crazy with a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old or 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. Yeah. And I was like, I am dying. This is not the life I was meant to live exclusively. And I think that's also why we made it for so little money in such a short amount of time. We're like 11 days or 12, you know, 2 weeks was what I could.
I feel like you were hinting at that and I didn't understand at the time. And now I do. Yeah, now
you're in the dark. You guys are in the hardest place of, you're in the cavern of parenting that is the hardest place in your creative life and in your emotional life and in your relationship life that you'll probably ever be until, like, as long as your parents are alive and happy, you know? So
yeah,
it just is really fucking hard and you're in the dark place and it'll get better. And it gets better when they're 5 and it gets great when the youngest is 7. I was just thinking today of how hard it was the last time I spoke to you. I was thinking of how hard it was when I spoke to you in 2020, when we were releasing that movie at the very beginning of a pandemic. It was April, 2020. And my kids were so little and everything was fucked up. And I think a lot of the reason life is so good right now is just because they're 7 and 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My 7-year-old is amazing. Like she'll like help me with things, you know, like we'll go film things. She can like hold a boom pole practically.
Yeah. Mine's editing. My daughter's editing today. My kids came in and they recorded their own 30-second timed perfectly podcast pitch for some kid podcast. And they were pitching Pippin and Charlemagne. And, you know, to talk a little bit, to just really drill down on this dad tangent that we're on, I am playing music in a middle-aged dad band occasionally.
Kestrin, I saw this actually. I was like, wait a minute, that's Kestrin. Yes, keep going.
And is this the thing where you were playing with Weird Al?
Yeah.
Is that related to that?
Yeah.
How cool. You're also like a rock star at the same time.
So hold crazy. On. Don't, it's not Weird Al is maybe perhaps the most important to me, but the list goes on. The list goes on, Kestrin. Who else is in this dad band?
It's David Wayne and Ken Marino's dad band. Mm-hmm. And it also features some other great writers and DPs. And Frank Barrera is a DP. He's amazing. He shot Reno 911 and a bunch of your favorite stuff and always gives relevant advice, which I could circle back to. Sweet Teddy B is also a writer, and John Spurney. And we have a lot of professional, Jessica McKenna, Jackie Tone from, she played Melrose on Glow, and Natalie Morales. It's just an amazing, Beth Dover, an amazing group, revolving cast of characters come in and they totally wail and it's amazing. And it's nice to be around people who have families. David Wayne's son, Henry Wayne, plays the saxophone in it and Jordan Katz plays the trumpet. And it's just really sweet to see this a guy named Craig Wedren, who was at the all-star band that we did a few weeks ago and is an amazing composer in his own right. And Joe Latrulio. It's like a state reunion. It's crazy. Yeah.
What if the state became middle-aged and had like a rock band in their garage, but then toured with it? That's what happened, basically.
That's what happened.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah,
and how did you know them, or how did you get invited?
I had just moved to South Pasadena and we used to trick or treat on Armstrong in Silver Lake. But this year, my husband said, let's just go trick or treat in the new place. So we took our kids. It's 5:00. I'm wearing my Dana like Zool costume from Ghostbusters. Everyone's in costume. It's Halloween. It's 5:00. The sun's still up. The kids are trick or treating. And there's this band of dudes in costumes tuning up in the garage driveway. And the vocals are too low. So I was like, dude, your vocals are too low. And then the guitar player was like, well, how's my level? And then the drummer's like, how's my level? How's my level? How's my level? And then we did a little sound check and then walked away, took the kids out. And then my kids burnt out and went to the neighbor's house. And we came back at like 9:00. And it is like thousands of people, darkness, Mardi Gras, like the hugest rager I have been to in years on a completely closed off to traffic, pedestrian only street. And there are hundreds of people mobbing this band and they're awesome. So we squeeze our way up to the front and we hang and we're getting ready to go after enjoying the set. and filming some of them. And my friend sees their set list and is like, dude, they're going to play the Time Warp next. And we were like, oh my God, we got to stay for Time Warp. And right when they start playing, my friend and I start shouting it from the audience because we know it back to front. But the lead singer kind of goes up on the lines and it becomes instantly clear that he doesn't know the song like a true goth nerd from the 90s, 80s, and 70s does. And the lead guitar player kind of intuitively picked up on this because we were shouting the lines so loudly, and he pointed at the mic and handed his mic to us and was like, take it. So I took the mic, and I also went through a whole understanding of the song, The Time Warp, where I was like, this guy doesn't know the song really well, but also it's a bunch of dudes. Who's going to sing the magenta part and who's going to sing the Columbia part? They're going to fucking, it's not going to go well because they don't have any girls to sing the girl part. So I was like, okay, I accepted the microphone give, understanding the peril that they faced as performers. Showed up, nailed the magenta part. My husband films the whole thing. It's like the most epic, legendary night of my entire life. We totally stole this band and it was amazing. We karaoke bombed them.
And not that it matters, but did you realize like David Wayne is in the band?
No, and the clown.
Just random dads.
No, it was just costume. Everyone's in costume, and the clown singing, it like literally has clown face paint, a nose, a colorful rainbow wig and a fat suit on. I had no idea it was Ken Marino. Yeah. And so afterwards, when my friend's like, I think that might be David Wayne. I think he plays the drums. And I was like, cool. And then we found out it was. So I tagged him in the video that I posted on my Instagram. And he said, hey, can you give me the high res version of it? And he was like, here's how to get in touch with me. And I sent him, and he's like, no, this isn't high res enough. And he like immediately director nerded out. He was like, no, if we're going to get the high res, you need to send from this iCloud link and this and not compress it and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, this guy's a fucking nerd. I love it. And then through that troubleshooting, we established contact. I invited him to one of my RVIP karaoke parties for New Year's. And then he invited me to play with the band. So I time warped my way into the dad band.
Wait, and you play violin, stand up?
I play electric cello.
Oh, electric cello. Yeah. That is like, if there is not a good argument for living in LA, that's probably the best version we've heard of.
That it is quite a tale, Kestrin. It is quite a tale.
It was crazy.
This is sort of interesting and not something we've ever talked about on the show, but like from time to time, depending on what circles you run in, like you are around people who you maybe were previously aware of, we'll say. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm sure there are listeners at home who are like, oh my God, I love David Wayne. That's so exciting. And there are other people who are like, oh, I'm not totally sure who that person is you're talking about, right? But like, that's going to be true for all sorts of different people, right? Like, you're going to run into people that you really, really admire that maybe have a super high profile, and you're going to run into people with super high profiles that you're not really caring about. But Kestrin, it seems like you have a good sense of how to deal with that, whether you're intimidated by that person or not, or that person is very famous or not, right? Warren, you were joking about how that's an advantage of living in Los Angeles, and it is, but that's also an easy thing to like get anxious about or mess up or just get in your head about, right? Like it would be easy to be like, oh my God, I gotta give David my screenplay. It's a hypothetical as a for instance. Right? You don't want to make someone feel awkward or feel used or use someone, right? So talk to us a tiny bit more about maybe just a general philosophy, not specifically about the dad band, but like in your travels, what's your philosophy on being around people who you were aware of prior to meeting them, we'll say?
I found others will disagree with me on this. Most reliable strategy has been to not acknowledge the fact that the person is famous and treat them like a normal person. Often it's come from hosting my own events, and then all of a sudden a famous person will be there and I'll be like, whoa.
Yeah, sure.
What are you drinking? And then I just kind of treat them like an asshole, like anyone else at one of my parties, and like put them to work. Like, what are you singing? What are you drinking? Mm-hmm. And that takes, once someone brings it, or if they sing their song or if they perform, then that kind of takes the steam or the loadedness out of the situation. my MO is to not acknowledge the fact that they're famous or that I know who they are. And I literally mentally shut something off in my brain that associates them with fame or any like emotional, psychological, like neural pathway. I kill it so that I can treat them as a human first and foremost. And then maybe later it'll come up, the acknowledgement. But my husband is 100% the opposite, where he'll say, hello.
Like, can you sign this, please?
He's not a weirdo like that, but he's just like, it is so great to meet you. I loved your work on blah, blah, blah. Welcome. Come on in. And I am completely the opposite, where I'm just like, what are you drinking?
Your work sucks.
You know what I like about...
I don't even acknowledge the fact that they work, because half the time I don't know what it is that they do. And I often do the best with famous people when I have no fucking clue who they are. And those are the people that I end up having the best relationships with long-term.
Send me athletes day after day. No problem. I'm like, sure. Right. Like, I get that you're a world-class celebrity that other people would be very excited about, but we're just going to work together for sure.
But also, it's so different when you own the bar and then these are your guests. It's different than if you're making your next movie and you're like, oh, there's this part, and the producer's like, what if we talk to like a Ken Marino about it? And you're like, well, I know Ken, but it'd be kind of weird for me to ask him to be in the movie. But it's not that weird, you know, like as a director to go ask someone like him to be in the movie. You know, like to me, that's where the awkwardness gets big. And it's happened to me some like when I first moved to LA, one of my first friends, Avi, his brother-in-law was like one of the top agents at CAA. And I was like, that's it. We're in, you know? And the guy could not, I mean, like never acknowledged that I was a filmmaker, like, you know, because I wasn't, I was making like YouTube videos. And it's sometimes you have access to these people in really high positions, but there's not really much you can do with them. But at other times there is something that you could do with them. You can collaborate on something, but it feels weird to bring it up, you know?
The timing of when you use your leverage, if you have any. And I think a lot of the time building trust is whether or not someone is famous or you're helping someone out or you need help.
So you'd made another movie that premiered at South by Southwest, Mother's Little Helper. What was the difference between that and Pretty Problems, which also premiered at South by, that made one of them put you on a list of someone that is offered movies versus the other one? Or was it just timing?
Fuck, that's such a loaded question. I think about this all the time. Everything I thought would happen with Mother's Little Helpers, I was like, I'm in South by. I made it. Like, we did it. We sold it. We got it, like, blah, blah, blah. Got signed by ICM. It's a big deal. And, you know, the pandemic definitely played a huge part in it. But we had TV stars in that movie, like some people that I like, all Americans recognize their faces, like hit TV shows and like people from SNL. And, you know, granted, it was a cancer movie and that's a big bummer. And no one really wants to top of your weekend watch list. But Pretty Problems, everything that I would have wanted to happen, best case scenario, happened for Pretty Problems. For the film itself, in terms of winning the awards at South By that it did and getting recognition within the organization, and the film sale and every possible positive outcome happened for Pretty Problems.
Mm-hmm. So you think the award... the audience award and the IFC distribution made a difference in a way that...
Well, because Mother's Little Helper also was distributed by... Who was it distributed
by? That was Gravitas Ventures. Gravitas. So, I mean,
it is different. Yeah, for sure.
It's different, but it was... But you could feel it from the second it got accepted. The winning the awards and stuff doesn't start with winning the award. It starts with your placement, your programming, the attention, who introduces your film at the Q&A, all that stuff matters. And you can feel momentum or lack of momentum.
Yeah. It's not just that it matters, but also they're all tiny signals that you probably don't even recognize unless you've done it twice on both sides of the coin, right? That's really insightful, Kestrin. That's really fascinating. Yeah, just the difference of like, oh, I'm like a little higher up at the table on this one, or like, oh, it's so nice, so-and-so is introducing my film. That's really fascinating.
And do you think it was because of the actual movie? Like people were just responding to this movie in a brighter way? Or do you think it's because it was your second time there and you were like welcomed back as like kind of one of the club people?
Well, I know that I had built a level of trust with the organization by showing up and going really hard, supporting that festival and supporting bringing everything I possibly had to the table and South by Southwest.
Incredible podcast appearances.
Amazing podcast promo. Yes. A lot of karaoke parties. And we had had a relation, you know, for like 10 or 15 years, we'd gone and brought everything to that festival. So we really, really loved it and we wanted it. And we told them that. Mm-hmm. And then we had a great turnout with sold out screenings. We didn't win all the awards that year, but we had a successful, you know, pandemic release. And I think that that factored in when it came down to the next time we got to program a movie that was much lighter hearted, that was a lot more commercial, that was like we had way more budget for this movie and a lot of resources. And it was about topics that were just, you know, income inequality and making fun of billionaires was just happened to be timely at the time. And even shit like pink, like last year, we decided we were going full Barbie pink in January 2022. And then that, and everyone wore pink and heels to the thing. And that's still, Barbiecore has been a fashion trend that has carried on for, you know, years since then. So it just, all this, everything seemed to align culturally with what was also going on with the years of groundwork we had laid in terms of relationships with the organization. And
yeah, you know. I love that. Let's unpack that even a little bit more, because I think that there are probably listeners at home who are like, well, what sort of groundwork are we talking about? Right. So you mentioned you have your RV karaoke bar and you were showing up, right? Which is kind of unique to you, right? But what are the other things that you were doing?
But we have heard that advice before of like, hey, go to the festival before you get in. Get to know the people.
Which is exactly right. But like, how? What do you mean? Like, what? Like, dig in a little more. Yeah.
So the first time I went to South by Southwest was, I think, 2005 or 2006. And I brought my electric cello and I scored some airplane miles and slept on someone's floor and started playing gigs there because I heard that South by Southwest was the cool music festival to play at. And then this is like 2006 and 2008, all these technology nerds were doing stuff and Twitter launched there and I helped put together a
checking
tech
in on
party.
Foursquare, basically.
Checking in on Foursquare. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Like Twitter launched.
You came up with Threads.
We came up with Threads. We invented the internet. And, you know, there is a sense of community. It's like going to summer camp every year for 15 years. You have your best friends. You have this culture. You have this ingrained ritual and history together. And like the joke, I remember for years, we always joked that you'd come home with South by South SARS. South by South SARS was like, everyone lost their voice at the end of the week and got really sick. And then we actually all got South by South SARS, which
at Comic-Con, we called it nerd flu, but same difference. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's almost like a college reunion or something that happens yearly. And that's what it means to be embedded into a festival where you get to know the programmers, not because you're kissing their butt trying to get a movie in, but because you're out with them at parties talking and asking them what movies they liked. And you're watching them introduce movies. And then you run into them at a bar later and they're singing karaoke and then you back them up.
That can be metaphorical as well. That does, just because you don't know how to sing karaoke as well as Kestrin does, there are other, like, you have to find your own version of that, right? Which is a theme that we hear on the show all the time. It's like there's all sorts of different versions of backing people up and like showing up to the party, whether that's singing or something else, who knows, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the drummer with a van is the one you're gonna hire over the drummer without a van who needs a van to like haul all his shit around. And that's another thing. I have a friend, John Bernstein, who every time he goes to Sundance, he rents a car because he knows people are going to need a safe ride home and he can always offer a ride.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I mean, you put in the work, you laid the groundwork, you knew the festival, you had the movie there, the timing was better, you know, for the second film. So, but do you think if you would have made that second film first, you would have gotten to this point faster? Like, I guess COVID, I'm trying to figure out.
Cut out the COVID. Or, and you're asking, is it the film? Is it the film or is it the accumulation?
Yeah, because my next question was going to be like, what did you learn between the first and the second film that you brought to the second film to make it more commercial or brighter? Like, do you feel like you actively were like, okay, I made this movie about cancer. It got like these accolades, premiered at this great festival, but people weren't excited to see it. And for my next movie, I want to do the opposite thing. I want to make it like a crazy comedy, making fun of people that everyone likes to make fun of.
Yeah, I joke that my first movie was about being afraid of having a baby, and then I got pregnant while we were filming. And my second movie was about losing a loved one, and then my best friend died. And so I was like, so my third movie is going to be about someone who's a wildly successful A-list global superstar director who lives their best life. But in a lot of ways, Pretty Problems is about like people partying and enjoying extreme wealth and being threatened by it and all their relationship to extreme wealth. And it's not all good, clearly, but it is really, really fun. And in my Q&A intros, I would say, there are a lot of important films that are coming out this year. And I just want to let you know that this isn't one of them. I hope you like dick jokes. Like, shit's about to get pretty. And that was definitely intentional. That was definitely intentional.
Yeah. You want to give the audience a good time.
Yeah. And to your question of if I had made Pretty Problems first, I don't know, but I do think it's complicated because I had a friend who made a movie that won Sundance and went on to, you know, the stratosphere of career, and I'll substitute a different actor in for the movie. But I was like, for your advice to me, would you say, keep doing what you're doing, just keep making stuff no matter what, just shoot it, blah, blah, blah. Or would you say never make another movie again unless you have an A-list movie star in it?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, wouldn't have been a Tom Cruise movie if Tom Cruise wasn't in it. That I think he kind of gently was like, stars certainly help. And he only made one. Mm-hmm. And then he went on to the Marvel Catapult
studio film.
Yeah. So I definitely think about that as I'm putting together my next movie.
Counterpoint. Like, he only made one. And if you can make a Tom Cruise movie as your first film, everyone, I want to be very explicit, go do that. But bringing it back to something that we can talk about, you had legit stars in Mother's Little Helper. And your first film, Let's Ruin It with Babies, I'm not super familiar with. But like, they're stepping stones, right?
Yeah.
Like, there is that incremental move. And if you're constantly waiting for Tom Cruise's, you know, agent to read the script or for his schedule to free up or whatever, you're going to have to wait till there's no more Mission Impossible movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's really good advice if you have the access. But if you don't have the access, you shouldn't wait around, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I will say that this person's partner at the time, like spouse, was also a rep of one of the, like, so say Tom Cruise's agent. So like, he did have that advantage, right? Nowadays, since like you can feel like a little like juice come in where your team expands or people get you more meetings or you get more opportunities and then you get attached to some movies. I thought when you were attached to movies, someone gave you a check and you were rich. But what I've learned so far is you get attached to a movie and then you get a movie star and then a bunch of stuff happens and then you do your deal and then you make the movie and you probably get paid DGA, whatever, which is all great.
Or it doesn't happen.
Yeah. And the approach to stars has been really fun. And I know that you guys have talked about this on this podcast, but one like path that I've experienced so far has been I just go up and talk to them, whoever I feel most comfortable asking nicely to be in my movie. That's how I did Mother's Little Helpers. I had personal relationships with all of them, most of them from acting class from like 10 years. So I felt very comfortable asking Dave Gentoli nicely because he was my old friend, and Milana and Brita and Melanie I'd met once, but I invited her to coffee and she said yes. With the movies that I'm attached to now and the way that we're approaching actors, I had a little bit I got attached to one that's just a fucking hilarious script. And it was a revelation getting attached to my first movie that had a producer that had won Oscars. And I was so excited.
And you had written your past three movies, right?
I didn't write Pretty Problems. Michael Tennant, who's a wonderful writer, wrote Pretty Problems, but I wrote the first two and okay. not the third. And I was attached to a script that my agent had sent me that was just for me, a home run. And we made a list, right? And then, mm-hmm. and then the producer just is like, we don't need to like talk to anyone. Just like, tell me who you want and we'll go get them. And we'll let the script speak for its work and we'll let your work speak for its work. And then I didn't get the first one that I wanted. Granted, it was like a huge, huge, mega, mega superstar who isn't like a rock star who's not actually acting. But, and then it went down and then you just kind of chunk down the list and you wait, you know, 3 weeks, a month, 6 weeks, however, before they pass or say yes. So I had set this kind of jaded outlook that mm-hmm. that's how it is and nothing ever happens. However, I became attached to another movie and I had my number one person on the list. And they were like, all right, we're going to go out to her. And I girded my loins for rejection. And then they called and said, she wants to star in it. And not only that, she wants to produce it and she wants to meet you and she wants to get on the phone. And then mm-hmm. we met and she was so prepared. And halfway through the meeting, she was like, so did I get it? I was like, did you get it? Did you think yeah. I was interviewing you? Oh, yeah. That's sweet. Like how kind of you. And so it doesn't have to be the grind. Like it can go both ways. And, you know, time will tell who goes first. And I have my other projects that I'm writing that I just shot a short film and like I'm location scouting right now just to keep busy on all fronts. It's like a multifaceted war that you wage on all fronts that never ends.
Wait, so you're scouting for another short that you're making?
So I shot a short already. I put together an amazing team and we shot some great stuff. I got
paid for
that
yourself
that I wrote. I had a EP that invested in it, who I'd worked with before. And, she did a phenomenal job. She's also, a performer and, we got a Marvel stunt coordinator to coordinate it and a VFX company to do the VFX.
You'd mentioned before that Mother's Little Helper was really scrappy in terms of resources, right? Like it's a lot of favors and you had accrued a lot of favors over these last few years. You had great relationships. So you turned a small amount of money into something really meaningful, right? But that gets hard to continue to do over and over again. At a certain point, people are like, Kestrin, are you going to pay me this time or what? Or the other side of like, I would rather shoot for 3 weeks instead of two. You know, like I'm mm-hmm. I'm limited by these things rather than being empowered by them at a certain point. Sometimes, depending on the sort of film you want to make. But so Pretty Problems, you've mentioned, has more resources, right? How did you acquire said resources? Like what steps had to happen in order for it to level up like that? And then how did it change your approach as a filmmaker? What did you like? And maybe what did you miss about the scrappier versions?
I got an email from a stranger on the internet that said, hey, we liked Mother's Little Helpers. We have a fully financed movie that shoots on this billionaire compound in Healdsburg for 3 weeks. Here are some pictures. Would you like to read the script?
And that was Pretty Problems.
Yeah. And I was like, okay.
And you still have all of your organs. None of them were harvested and stolen.
Yeah. And that was the star of Pretty Problems, Britt Rentschler, who's also a producer that cold emailed me. She's a very proper Southern woman and she writes a mean cold email.
And was it cast already?
A lot of it was cast. I got to put in two people. And the script is really funny. Michael Tennant's an amazing writer. So I laughed out loud on the plane and it was a very easy thing to say, let's talk.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool. Incredible. Because okay, what's funny about it is I remember seeing like, oh, Kestrin's got another movie at South by. Awesome. Of course she does. because you hustle. Do you know what I mean? You're on vacation, you're location scouting, right? So like, I just kind of assumed, well, okay, well, she just wrote another movie and went and shot it. I love that. So, okay. So then let's talk about the differences then, right? Like you go from something that's really, really close to your heart, right? Like really personal, friends, semi-improvised, you know, like a lot of naturalistic lighting. You're not limited by, you know, light stand, like all sorts of junk, right? You're just doing it, right? Like it's like pure cinema. And then now you're into something that you didn't write yourself, that maybe is encumbered by some of that other stuff. What did you like and what did you miss about the old way of filmmaking?
I didn't miss anything about the old way. I took all the best parts of it and we integrated it into the story, into the strategy. Yeah. So we talked about it a lot with Michael and Britt. We were like, how about we get it as written and then we riff? We scratched the improv itch very well. Mm-hmm. It was amazing having a producer that did all the stuff. Pretty Problems was one of the funnest delights of my life. The biggest problem that happened during Pretty Problems is my husband called me 3 days into the shoot and told me my cat was dying. Mm. And I was like, I don't think this cat's dying. I think she just doesn't like you. I called a friend who there were these weird $29 flights up to Healdsburg where we were shooting for some reason, a new airline launched. So they had these really cheap flights. And I was like, hey, can you get my cat? Can you be on an airplane in 3 hours on this flight? I'm buying you a $29 flight and then come hang out on the movie set. It was our night off and bring the cat. And then I'll fly you back tomorrow for another $29 and I'll pay you $100 to just like come party in Healdsburg for a night. And she was like, sure. And she brought the cat and then the cat was totally fine. And everyone on our cast and crew were totally insane cat people. And the cat was showered in love. And because the producer's amazing, whose place we were staying at, she was like, yeah, she gave me permission to do it. And it turned the barest minimum of problems. I had my fucking cat on set with me in this amazing situation. It was the best 3 weeks. It sucked to not be with my children at that time, but did it suck that much?
No,
sure.
Like it's really nice to have uninterrupted focus when you're doing your life's work, as it is good to have uninterrupted focus when you're with your family. Like it's important to take family trips where you're not working and you're not pitching in the middle of shit and you can be present. It's equally important to do your fucking work. Yeah. And so Pretty Problems was really easy. And I know it was hard for a lot of the filmmakers, or like the producers and actors who hadn't made a movie before, but I was like, you guys, this is really easy. Like a card got stuck in the camera. Like a card got stuck in the camera at one point and we had to like reshoot some stuff. And then it turned out that the card was fine. And like, we were nervous, you know, we lost half a day of shooting one day and then we made it up. Boo fucking who.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a breeze. I will tell you this too. I don't want to brag, but it took place. The house where we shot literally was a vineyard for a winery. And there was a bunch of wine from the vineyard in the basement that the owner was trying to purge from their cellar. So they were like, just drink all the Demol.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's nice. And so there's no water on set.
No water.
Jesus, we're making a movie.
So I don't know. Just let that be, I guess, to listeners that you can make something that does well and it can also be really fun and you really can have great relationships with people and you can, you know, it doesn't have
to
be war.
You have to fire at least one person every day, right? For the movie to be good.
I almost fired. No one got fired. No, I thought about it. I thought about it and then I told them I was thinking about it and then I didn't have to do it.
That's a good power move.
It is good to let people know like, hey, you need to step up and hear the ways in which I need you to. Do you know what I mean? Like that's, I think that's good leadership for sure. So
I actually delegated it to someone else to have the conversation. Like, you're out. There you go. And they're like, no, they're not out. I'll handle it. I'll fix it. And I was like, okay, fix it. But I learned a lot about delegating. That was the big, like leap between the two movies was learning how to delegate. And I'm excited to delve into that even deeper, even like with casting, for instance. So like, that's where we are now, where I show up and do the call, you know, but I'm not scrounging for a meeting.
Kestrin, before we lose you, so are you making this movie with this movie star? What is happening next?
There's a couple. So, you know, I'm attached to a couple movies, haven't been announced yet, so can't provide the details, but I'm super excited about it. And I'm also really excited about this other one where we get to, you know, travel the world and tell a global story that's an action comedy. And
do you get paid before any of these things are green? Like, are they greenlit? Where are they? Like,
I don't. So my lawyer tells me not yet. He's like, this is when it happens, that it happens after the Starz deal is done.
And are these all studio, all three of these studio films?
They're in varying levels. They're at all different levels. And I haven't been enjoying, I have definitely enjoyed studio pitch opportunities. It's one of my favorite things.
Like when someone is considering you as a director and you come in and give your take on the project.
Yeah. To one of the big movie studios. It's really, really cool.
And you do not get paid for that.
And you don't get paid for that. No. And I talked to one friend who directed some studio movies because I was like, I didn't get this one. And it's an $80 million movie. And here's what I'm processing. And he's like, why would they give it to you? What have you done to prove you can do it? Because if it's $80 million, they're talking to five other people who've probably done it before that they're already friends with. So you have to do something to make yourself stand out in that process beyond their friends and the people who've done it a bunch before. And then he shared a story of how he created a pitch that went above and beyond what was being asked of him, that he wasn't even being invited to pitch on a big studio blockbuster movie. And he made jokes with the development execs that he was going to do the pitch that he hadn't been invited to. And then I think he maybe got the opportunity, or he and his partner, his directing partner, went ahead and shot a short film that they wrote, directed, and shot in 24 hours. And his colleague happened to be a VFX, you know, ninja master, and did a full build out in 10 days that would have killed a mere mortal. But because they were jacked on adrenaline, they went for it. And then they got the pitch, and then they were told they were going to shoot the movie. They got the job, but then they didn't actually get the job.
Yeah.
But classic. It opened a world of opportunity, like Spielberg, Abrams, like all these amazing people they did get to write for. And they ultimately did get a different studio movie. And that was something that inspired me to shoot the thing that I just shot, where I was like,
well, let's go do it.
Why would they give it to me? Yeah. Yeah. It was great advice, though.
Well, Kestrin, we cannot wait for all of your future projects. Congratulations on yet another film. Come back soon. Tell people how they can keep tabs on you, see your current film. We're rolling out the red carpet, so to speak.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I invite you, dear listeners of Just Shoot It podcast, to watch Pretty Problems on Hulu as much as possible. You can watch it over and over again. Sure. And
just leave it on in the background, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of things you miss the first three or four times you watch it.
Yeah.
Go deep. And as you hunt for Easter eggs, if you'd like to scroll through Instagram, you can find me at Kestrin Pantera. Just thank you guys so much for talking. It's great to hear your voices and see you doing well. And you're doing great.
Yeah. Well, before we say goodbye.
Thanks, Kestrin.
Okay.
A minute more to do an unpaid endorsement with us.
For sure.
Unpaid endorsements.
So my unpaid endorsement for this week, I don't think I've talked about this on the show, but do either of you two know what a cowboy tub is?
Oh, yeah, I have one.
Do you really? Oh, Kestrin. Yeah. So do I. And I'm loving it. But for the uninitiated, a cowboy tub is where you take like a stock tank, like a feeding tank, like something you would use to feed cattle with. So like ours is about the size of a jacuzzi. It's like 8 feet in diameter. So like a big kiddie pool, basically, but made out of galvanized steel that we put in the backyard. We leveled the ground. You lay down some sand, you put a pool filter and some chlorine in it, and you've got like a little pool. And we built like a little deck around ours. And it's been a labor of love and something that we've been talking about for a long time and seemed kind of crazy to do. And then during the pandemic, I think people really got into them. And like, that was like a thing. Like if you were like, what if we had a tiny pool for a couple grand and then you're off to the races? It's getting really hot. Ours, we built for this summer. I cannot believe how much I like it. I like it even more than I was hoping.
I can call attention to two trends now trending. Delegation.
Yeah.
That's delegate really stuff. Top. Delegating is top of mind.
I have other people come up with my unpaid endorsements all the time. Yeah. Why would I do it myself?
So delegating is so hot right now. And I had a great experience with airline miles, airline points. I really endorse picking one airline. For me, it was Delta. Oh, we got upgraded to Delta One twice. Yeah. Ooh. And we got a lot of Delta One upgrades, and it was like low cost, high luxury.
Are you gold?
Oh, my husband's diamond.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Does he fly for work?
Yeah, he did a lot.
So dive in on that a little bit. So basically you're saying focusing on a single airline is the way to just kind of consolidate points.
Yes. Pick one airline for your whole family and get a credit card that gives you a bunch of points that your whole family uses. Mm-hmm. And then once you get into a system, Delta is mine, it's almost like a gamified app where they really want you to be rewarded by continuing to buy flights on their their portal. So you get automatic upgrades once you get a certain level of points, and the quality of life is night and day for the cost, which is the same. I mean, Delta's a little bit more expensive than like buying something on Southwest, you know, or just doing the Kayak Expedia cheapest version. But I think that the rewards are truly worth it. And that's really
Delta One is first class, right?
Delta One is first class, and international Delta One is super first class. It's like Air France or Emirates first class. Right. It's the lovely. Firstest. Yeah. So that's my kind of ethos is, and then in conclusion, low cost, high luxury. I'm all for a low cost, high luxury lifestyle, which I think Delta loyalty points and delegation can bring that to you.
I would even argue a cowboy tub is sort of
you're right.
Low cost, high luxury. You're floating in your backyard. Kaplan, what you got?
Well, I have. So my first thing is kind of related to what Kestrin is talking about. I was in Israel and my daughter got food poisoning. My son got hand, foot, mouth disease.
No.
He woke up with spots all over his face. And I was like, okay, well, I'm an Israeli citizen. I have free health insurance. I should just like go get a medical appointment. And they're like, well, your kid's not an Israeli citizen and you don't get free health. Even you don't get free health insurance here. And my dad was like, wait, you don't have travel health insurance? And I was like, no. Do Americans do this? And he's like, we never leave this country ever without travel health insurance.
I think vice versa. I think that people who have free health insurance and are like, oh my God, I'm going to the land of America. They're like, well, I have to get health insurance just to be safe, right? I think it is reverse, right?
Wait, when you went to Italy, did you get
health kidding? Insurance? No, man.
So what would have happened if your leg got cut off?
I don't know.
I know. I didn't even think about it. And so now
Delta
we're like,
one.
Well, so I was like, I have this Chase Sapphire preferred card. I bet that it like, because it hooks you up with all these travel things, travel insurance and car insurance. I bet it will have some sort of health benefits for travel. And it does not. But if you get the next one up, the Chase Sapphire Reserve, they cover like up to $2,500 of medical expenses.
Wow.
Chase Sapphire Preferred. I think all the Chase cards, you can actually call Chase and they can help you find a doctor and stuff if you need that help. If you don't like have any
Jesus
connections
Christ,
locally.
That's crazy.
So if you're traveling and you run into any problems, just check out whatever credit card you have. Their odds are high that they help you in some way with traveling. Even if it's like, I think Chase, if you bought your ticket on your Chase card and your flight's delayed more than 2 hours, they'll give you like $100 or something. I mean, they have all these little things that you might not know about. So I've never had travel health insurance, but now, especially with the kids, it's something that's on my mind. And the other thing that I'm endorsing, which is something my wife just told me about today, and I haven't even researched to know if this is true or not, but we're like majorly jet lagged. And I was like so tired at like 3 p.m. And she's like, this is what you do. You make your coffee, you drink it, and then you take a 20-minute power nap.
Yeah.
And then when you wake up, the caffeine will hit you and you're like,
You
it's like going
it
off,
takes
off
you like up a, naturally. Yeah.
Like I've, a ramp.
I've heard that's like a residence trick. Like if you're a doctor in residence, that's a move that they do. The trick is you have to be able to fall asleep immediately. Like you need to slam an espresso and then you have your head hit the pillow. Like you need to be drinking your coffee in bed in order for it to work.
Well, I tried it and it worked the other days with my jet lag. I've been taking these like quick power naps and I wake up and I'm like so dazed and confused for like 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I'm like REM sleep. But this coffee trick kind of...
Did it work?
Kind of worked. But yeah, who would have thought like drink coffee and go to sleep?
Yeah.
But it worked for me, but I only tried it one time.
Let me ask.
You know, check it out.
Did you try ZipFizz?
No, it's on my list.
There was a rash of people endorsing ZipFizz for Kestrin earlier, like a month ago on the show. People were like,
have you heard of it?
It's
like a...
No.
It's like an airborne... It's like a thing you put in a drink. People use it on set a lot, and it like...
Yeah, it's like having a powdered Red Bull that you throw into like a bottle of water or whatever.
It has a ton of caffeine, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. I have jet lag, too. I just want to say in solidarity. Oh, I got back on Saturday.
Oh, I didn't realize. Man, that's relatively recent. That's wild. Well, I've just been floating in the trash can in my backyard.
Well, Kestrin, thanks so much for coming. If you have any comments or questions, anything you want us to pass on to Kestrin, please email us. We're justshootitpod@gmail.com. You can find me. I'm on Instagram @okaplan. And I'm on Threads, too, which at the same username, @okaplan.
All right, way to go.
What about you, Matt?
I'm not on Threads, but I'm across all of the other social media platforms @MrMattEnlow. I'm waiting to see. Who knows? Nobody's dating.
Waiting to see what?
I don't know. Like, I don't go on Twitter anymore anyway. So, like, do I need a replacement for it? I think not.
I think so.
Come to Threads. It's all cute pictures right now. It's a very early, sweet, innocent, like, Garden of Eden of social media.
Yeah, no. So I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow across all social media, excluding Threads currently. TBD, we'll find out. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. And produced by Tyler Small. And you're listening to music provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.